This is your Professor Debbie. Welcome to True Crime University, where we have intellectual discussions about crime. This is a class for mature audiences with mature language and subject matter. I have a PhD in criminal justice and 17 years experience in the law enforcement field, and I am happy to share my knowledge with you. Couple quick announcements before we start class. This is a one-room schoolhouse with one teacher, like in Little House on the Prairie. I do everything myself, research, writing, recording, editing, and I depend on your help to keep the lights on in the classroom. Please consider becoming a teacher's pet for only $2 a month at patreon.com/truecrimeuni. Also, it's a big help if you leave me 5-star reviews on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hello, class. How's everybody tonight? Before we start, I have a quick announcement. I'm going to be redoing my Patreon, Teacher's Pets. There's only going to be one level. Just going to make it real easy for everybody. So as I mentioned last time, I was going to try to do a case that was kind of a request, but I didn't want to say what it was because I was afraid I wouldn't find enough information. Well, never fear. I actually found the original case that we're going to talk about. Plus, since that happened, there's actually been another criminal case of the same kind. So we're going to talk about both of those and some, I guess I can use the word padding, facts and information and such. And this is a family-friendly episode, one of those rare ones where there's no beheading or disemboweling or my truck driver mouth or any of those. So a while ago on Instagram, and I don't know who the person is, or I would say their name, somebody asked me to do a caper, and I'm like, caper? So I came up with the perfect one. This one's actually kind of fun. The topic is very light. There are actually, like I said, actual crimes, but they're not disgusting. Nobody gets hurt. I found the research kind of interesting, and hopefully you will too. So, as the title implies, I'm hoping you saw the title, we're going to talk about coupons and coupon crimes. And there are actually such things. So, a little bit of history to start out with for you youngsters. I might have to put this into context. But, okay, when I was a kid, 70s and 80s, we used to get actual newspapers that you read every day that were on, like, newsprint. You may have seen some or heard of them. On Sunday, we had something called the Sunday paper. And it came out either Sunday morning or Saturday evening, depending on where you lived. In my house, and I'm thinking either because we were poor or we were boring, maybe a combination. I wasn't boring, but the other people in my family were. This was a huge deal when the Sunday paper came. It'd be like, oh, the Sunday paper's here. And everybody in the family would run for their favorite part of the paper to read first. I looked at the comics because, you know, I was a kid. My grandfather went for the sports. And my mom and grandmother both went for the coupons and the store ads. And what these were is the stores around us, like grocery stores, Kmart, which isn't even around anymore. It was kind of like Walmart. I guess just whatever store was around you. They would have like this flyer with these pictures of stuff. And it was like, this is what we have on sale this week. And my mother and grandmother would get so excited over this. And they would be looking at these things and they're like, oh, look what Giant Eagle has this week. They have broccoli for blah, blah, blah. And, oh my God, there's a coupon. Get the scissors. And they'd be looking at all these things and they writing lists. I'm going to go to this store and this store. They have this and this. And cutting out all these coupons. I'm like, oh my God, really? And I know my mom had one. It was like a kind of a wallet looking thing. It was like a kind of accordion looking, and it had sections. And to organize her coupons, or be like, I don't know, health and beauty and meat and whatever you bought at the store. I don't know. She would have coupons in this thing. And if you went to the store with one of these people, it'd be like, oh, wait, I have a coupon. I have a coupon, 10 cents off. I get 10 cents off. See my coupon. Don't forget my 10 cents off. And if you were behind a line with somebody who would pull out like 100 coupons, it was so aggravating and annoying. There was a show on TLC. It's not on anymore. It was on for 4 seasons. You may have seen it or heard of it. It's called Extreme Couponing. So I made myself watch. You'll see in a minute why I say I made myself watch an episode of this. And my apologies ahead of time if you like this show, because I'm going to basically roast it. So the show featured 2 different women who called themselves extreme couponers. And it seems like the goal was to see if they could get all of this stuff using only coupons to pay for all this stuff. And I'm bothering to talk about this show. You'll see why. Okay, I'm talking about the behavior of these people, these extreme couponers. So the first woman, they show her house, and she has piles of coupons stacked up. She uses the manufacturer's coupons, and how she gets all these coupons is the people who deliver her newspaper that has the inserts with the coupons. Apparently, at the end of the day, when they don't have any more newspapers, they take them all to be recycled. So she asked these people who deliver the papers, can you bring me all the extra coupons? She's probably not the only one who does that. But anyway, she has a ton of coupons. She also has a ton of stuff in her house. In her shower, and I'm hoping that she has another shower in which to wash yourself, because you can't in this one. There are 450 rolls of toilet paper, 250 rolls of paper towels, 60 boxes of cereal, 70 bottles of detergent, and 200 bars of soap. I don't think those are all in the shower. I think it's just the paper products. She said she started couponing. They use the verb couponing. They use it as a verb, like to read, to write, to coupon. It's a verb. So she started doing this when her husband lost his job, which is like a legitimate reason. You can see, you know, you want to save money. So she takes 4 shopping trips a week, and it takes her up to 6 hours to prepare for these shopping trips. They showed her with her computer printing stuff out and making lists. It looked like she was preparing for a raid, and she would print the sales for the week and she had this is just for the one store, but I suspect that she had one for all the stores she goes to. A laminated alphabetical list of every item in the store and its location. So Vanna shows her getting ready. She puts on all this makeup. Like, I think this was just for show. She puts on dominatrix boots. I know I'm trying to keep this family friendly. So if your kids are asking what a dominatrix is, well, take care of that for them. By the way, I was a dominatrix once for Halloween. She had a list and 1,300 coupons with her. So her husband goes with her to help until he has to leave to go to work. And one of the first things it shows on the show is they're buying mustard. And she says, since mustard doesn't spoil, we need 77 bottles. Her husband goes, I don't even like mustard. So they took every single bottle of mustard from the shelf. Remember this for later. They had 4 carts full of stuff. And at the checkout, she spent 2 hours standing there with all her coupons. I could not stand at a checkout for 2 hours. First of all, my body wouldn't allow it. Second, I don't have the patience. I'm lucky if I have the patience to stand in a line for 10 minutes. If I was this cashier, I would have wanted to choke this woman. So it shows her scanning these coupons. The cash register system broke. It just actually like crapped itself because she had too many coupons. So this poor cashier had to enter them manually. So the shows on TV, it's showing the amount going down in like this dinging sound, ding, ding, ding. And she's like, oh, my heart is racing. And I'm like, this reminds me of slot machines, gambling. You know how you have that like ding, ding noise and it's like kind of exciting and it involves money. And I'm thinking she's getting an adrenaline high from this. And it is kind of like gambling in like, you know, can I make it? Supposedly she only had so much cash with her, but I think that was just a fake. Like for the show, they were saying that she really did have enough money. You know, like how much can I get? How much can I save? Remember this for later. And this is why I think part of this, I think a lot of reality shows are scripted to some degree. So there's people standing around watching, and then when she finishes shopping, everybody claps. I'm like, yeah, right. Like, that would really happen in real life. So then she does this little jig in her dominatrix boots and bows. And it says that she saved almost $2,000. The second woman on the show had 7 kids, and she referred to them as her litter. That's right, her litter of kids. She had products everywhere. Her bedroom, her poor kids' playroom. There's like their toys and stuff. And there was this huge shelf of cans that's hogging up their playroom. I felt really bad for these kids. She said that she had a stockpile of almost 6,000 items. And then it was like a scene out of a Charles Dickens novel. All of these kids were sitting at this long table, and some of them were cutting out coupons. Some of them were making a list. And she actually said, this is a quote, "We teach our litter how to coupon." I'm like, oh my God, this is like watching a train wreck. And here's all these kids cutting coupons out where they could be using this nice big table to be playing a board game or doing a puzzle or something fun. But no, she's putting them to work couponing. Then she calls the store to see if their coupon policy is the same. And she calls the manager by name. She actually says, "Hi, Rebecca, this is Tiffany." Of course, her name is Tiffany. And she learns that their policy has changed. So cue the dramatic music. Oh my God, what are we going to do? I'm not swearing. So she about poops herself. So to combat the store policy of only doubling one coupon, her and her husband plan. Well, she'll take some stuff through the register and they'll double her coupons, and then he'll take some stuff. See how they circumvent that. And while she's checking out, they show people around the store again. I think this is scripted. Everybody's gasping, and somebody goes, "That's unbelievable. Go, girl, go." So the show is encouraging this, like, look at these people, how much money they're saving. It's like, okay, all right, fine. Remember all this for later, because we're going to get back to this. So I did some research on coupons in general, because, again, something I know very little about, nor do I really care about. But there are two kinds of coupons, at least today. There are paper and digital. I had no idea there was such a thing as digital coupons, but they're found online on websites. You can print them out. And some stores have you have an online account. And a lot of stores have apps like CVS and Walgreens. And these are just two that I read in the article that I read. But I'd be willing to bet that nowadays just about every store has an app, has an online app. So if you're so inclined, you can probably download it and do your shopping and couponing on there. You can even search for them. Supposedly you find a coupon and it stays in your account until you go to the store, present your card at the register, and that's how you use it. Sources of paper coupons are Sunday papers, weekly store ads, and these are usually at the store entrance. In-store coupons. These are in machines that dispense them. And I have seen these things at Walmart. They're black. They look like soap dispensers. And they're just kind of hanging out in random aisles near where the products that they are for are located, and you just pull on this thing and it spits out this little coupon. At the checkout, some stores, they give you a receipt. It's like 50 feet long and there's all these coupons in it, in the mail and online. So those are the places that you can legally and legitimately get coupons. So I read that this show, Extreme Couponing, fails to address the hidden costs of extreme couponing tactics. People often clean the shelves, like of the mustard, and then leave nothing for other people, which is just plain rude. You shouldn't have to know anything about couponing to know basic manners. Like, if one of these coupon people came and cleared the shelves of one of my favorite things, ice cream, and then there was no ice cream for me, I would be really mad. And the article I read, and of course all my sources are in the show notes, said, quote, "Most of us don't have the time, patience, or sense of entitlement it takes to engage in extreme couponing," end quote. So they had some guidelines for what they called considerate couponing. Don't photocopy them. This is actually illegal. Don't buy them. All coupons printed in the United States have a non-transferability clause, which means they're no good if they're sold. Many of the shady people that we're going to talk about offer stolen or counterfeit coupons. And don't clear the shelves. We just went over why you shouldn't do that. There's something called the CIC, Coupon Information Corporation. This is a nonprofit association of consumer product manufacturers dedicated to fighting coupon misredemption and fraud, which until I started researching for this episode, I really had no idea that this was even a thing, but that's why we're here, to learn about crime, because this is a crime, obviously. It was started in 1985, and it has exposed fraud schemes involving over $750 million. They say that the estimated cost of coupon fraud to manufacturers is between about $300 and $600 million a year. And if you think, well, why do we care about manufacturers? They're big and they have all this money. Well, they trickle down, and the costs trickle down to the consumers, which of course is us. Also, people who work for these manufacturers can lose their jobs. So here is the definition of coupon fraud, different types of coupon frauds. When you intentionally, that's the key word, intentionally, use a coupon for a product that you have not purchased or somehow otherwise fails to satisfy the terms and conditions for redemption. When a retailer submits coupons for products that they have not sold or were not properly redeemed by a consumer in connection with a retail purchase, so a store can do it also. And when coupons are altered or counterfeit, and that's going to be the focus of the crimes that we're going to talk about. These are some techniques of coupon fraud. Decoding, which is defined as intentionally applying coupons to the wrong products and pressuring the cashiers to accept. Mass printing, which is printing coupons to use multiple times and to redeem at different stores. Coupon modification, which is adjusting the coupon's terms of expiration, value, and the barcode. This is one that we're going to see come up. And this is not easy. This takes skill, knowledge, and the proper equipment. Buying and selling. You're allowed to share coupons with friends and family, but you can't buy or sell them. Using expired coupons, that's obvious. And shoplifting newspapers to get the coupons in them. And here are some tips on how to avoid coupon fraud. Know where your coupons come from. These are red flags that might indicate that your coupons come from a shady source. They're valued at more than the price of an item. Like a bottle of Pepsi costs $2 and the coupon is $3 off. That should make you go, what? There's no barcode on the coupon. It doesn't require a purchase to be made to redeem it. There aren't conditions of use. That's the small print. You know how if you look at a coupon, there's all that wee little microscopic print at the bottom. And paying for them. Just think about it logically. You shouldn't have to pay for coupons. It just doesn't make sense. If you see coupon fraud going on, you're supposed to report it to the U.S. Postal Inspector, the FBI, Federal Trade Commission, or IRS. According to the CIC, which I guess is like the Bible for using coupons, the people on the show Extreme Couponing routinely buy coupons from what they call clip services. And that's just like a place that you pay, they cut coupons out for you to save your time or so your kids don't have to do it for you. The legality of that is questionable. And there have been confirmed incidents of counterfeit coupons used on the show. The CIC said that they are, quote, extremely disappointed in the show and that they hope TLC would, quote, address the potential illegal acts that appear to have been portrayed on the show, end quote, and that the show appears to portray coupons being used in violations of the terms and conditions printed on the coupons. The CIC confirmed that on one episode in which counterfeit coupons were used, a 16-year-old boy from California used almost 36 coupons at a grocery store to get 408 rolls of toilet paper for free. The coupons were found to be fake, and his mother had to pay the store. The extreme fans of coupons love this show, and they say that it gives ethical couponers a bad name. They say that it's unrealistic, it encourages hoarding and wastefulness, and makes people who use them coupons seem nuts. And I just saw one episode, and I would agree with all of that. These people, to me, seem just unhinged. Many personal finance writers have bashed the show and the concept of extreme couponing. And as a result of this, many stores have now changed their coupon policies. So, in 2021, there was a movie called Queen Pins. It's a comedy about two best friends who start a counterfeit couponing business. They have misadventures, and in the end, they get away with what they do. And it's been criticized for sending the message that this is okay to do and glamorizes coupon crime. The women are portrayed as kind of Robin Hoods, like stealing from the big, rich manufacturers and helping out poor people. It's described as a, quote, comedic story of two down-on-their-luck Phoenix women who discover their path to prosperity by concocting a $40 million coupon counterfeiting scheme that all comes crashing down when they get caught, end quote. The filmmakers said that they were not trying to hurt anybody or glorify the crime. They're just trying to make a funny story. But they also cautioned that they didn't want people to think that it was funny or that they can do this also. And, you know, the saying, life imitates art. Well, this was based on a real life crime. And this is the main case that we're going to talk about today. Instead of two Phoenix women, it was three Phoenix women. I don't think they were friends or even knew each other, but they met each other through this business. They ran a multi-million dollar coupon counterfeiting scheme, and they were 40-year-old Robin Ramirez, 42-year-old Amico or Amy Fountain, and 54-year-old Marilyn Johnson. So Robin was the ringleader. None of them had any criminal records, and it was believed that Robin had started selling counterfeit coupons as early as 2007. How this was discovered was that one of the companies that she was ripping off or counterfeiting the coupons of was Procter & Gamble, which, if you never heard of them, they're a really big company. I think they make mainly like health and beauty stuff. Well, they were doing a routine audit of their manufacturer's coupons. Apparently, when you give a store a coupon, they eventually send it back to the manufacturer and they audit them. And somebody at Procter & Gamble found that things weren't adding up. They were missing money. This actually went on for years. They eventually came across the phony coupons and realized what was going on. They couldn't get any police or other authorities to be interested because everybody was like, coupons, and who cares about that? So they hired some private investigators. Somehow the private investigators were able to figure out that these counterfeit coupons were coming from Phoenix, Arizona. Procter & Gamble said that their losses trickled down, and quote, for every $50,000 loss, potentially one worker's job is lost, end quote. So people were actually losing their job because this company was losing money. After they figured out that the culprit was in Phoenix, the PIs turned the case over to the Phoenix Police Department. Sergeant David Lake was in charge of the case, and they called it the Operation Super Coupon. When Lake first heard about this case, he supposedly said, "Coupons? What?" And then he realized the magnitude of the crime. And he said that the PIs actually had a lot of resources that the police didn't. So they assembled a team, most of who worked undercover, and they put this case together in 8 weeks. Somehow they figured out that some of the coupons were being sold on eBay, but the main source was a website called Savvy Shopper Site. And the name of that is similar to a legitimate coupon site. So Sergeant Lake looked at 15,400 orders submitted to this website. He said, quote, "I didn't see any onesie twosie type orders. I saw quantity orders," end quote. He said, "They're buying bunches and they're redeeming them in bunches." It even looks shady, at least to me. On the front page, it says that in order to be a customer, you have to be referred by a current customer, like a gang or a cult. Then it literally says, "Don't tell anybody you don't know about it." You know, like Fight Club, the first rule of Fight Club is don't talk about Fight Club. It's literally don't talk about Coupon Club. Lake said that these were the red flags from the website. You had to spend at least $50 per order. You needed a referral from a current customer. The only way you could pay was with a money order or a prepaid debit card called a Green Dot Money Pack. And the most telling is that you couldn't talk about it. And I'm thinking, I don't know anything about coupons, but just reading this first page of this website, I'm like, this is shady AF. How could you not know that this is dishonest? And supposedly, from what the police said, they talked to a lot of customers. A lot of the people did know, or at least suspected, that it wasn't up and up. I'm also thinking a lot of people are just naive. One of the undercover detectives somehow managed to befriend a member and get an invite to the coupon club. Then they bought some coupons, which were very well-made fakes. For example, one was for a free bag of Yukonuba dog food. If you know anything about Yukonuba, well, it's out of my price range. If you're a dog or cat mom, you know how expensive that stuff is. Well, the coupon was for a free bag of Yukonuba worth $50. Later, the CIC demonstrated how it had been made. The original coupon was for $1 off of Pringles potato chips, but Robin Ramirez had added new text, pictures, and a barcode. So when she was done with it, it looked like a Yukonuba coupon. Some of the customers started their own sites and bought and sold counterfeit coupons provided by Ramirez. Some resold them on eBay. And some, like I said, had their own websites. This is how Marilyn Johnson got involved. She started her own site and also helped Robin put hologram stickers on the fake coupons. Marilyn's husband, Arthur, said that she started out as a customer and then started working for the site part-time. She was supposedly paid in coupons. A relative of Amy said that she didn't get any money for this, so I'm assuming she was paid in coupons also. Marilyn was described as an assistant. Amy was described as an assistant and packager, and I really have no idea what the difference between those two job descriptions is. We unfortunately know very little about these people. Marilyn was a retired teacher who bred English Mastiffs, you know, those really huge dogs. Amy was a licensed chiropractor, and she lived for free in what they called the stash house. This was a house that Robin rented near her that held all the boxes and materials, which took up a substantial amount of room. The mail carrier said that she picked up between 20 and 200 packages from Amy every business day, and the return labels on them said Savvy Shopper. I'm trying to picture 200 packages, and I can't even. In July 2012, detectives got a search warrant for the financial records of this website, and that's how they found that the address was a P.O. box at a UPS store. So they staked out this store and saw Robin Ramirez go in and retrieve packages with coupons. They then tailed her to her home on North 29th Avenue in the suburb of Desert Hills. And I wouldn't call this a house. I would call it a mansion. I have a picture of it in my show notes. This house is beautiful. It's like, I don't know the name of that architectural style. Kind of like a Southwestern. It looks like it's made out of adobe, like the natives made. It has an in-ground pool and a six-car garage. In 2013, she sold $475,000 in coupons. So the cops assembled themselves and they prepared to raid the houses of Robin, Amy, and Marilyn. I'm sure all three of them, plus their husbands, were surprised because they had no idea that they had been caught and this was coming. Robin's husband, a retired pilot, claimed he had no idea his wife was doing anything illegal. The police seized, and here I've seen two different figures. There's quite a difference between them. I've seen $25 million worth, and I've seen $40 million worth. Either way, that's a ton of counterfeit coupons and the records of all of the customers. Upon examining Robin's computer and files, they were able to figure out how she'd run the operation. She'd start by writing a letter to a manufacturer complaining about their product, saying, "I'm never going to buy this again. It sucks." And then they would send her a free product coupon, which I can't figure out. You know, they're like, "You hate it. It's awful. Well, here, have some for free." The police found a master file of these letters with fake names. Then Robin would arrange with a printing company. It obviously was a shady company, suspected to be in Asia, to reproduce these coupons in mass amounts. These were then returned to her and sold to her customers. The lowest value of coupon she had was for $2 off. There were hundreds of thousands of customers, and Robin had fielded over 20,000 orders. One woman in Illinois spent $77,841 on 148 orders. I'm assuming this is over a period of time. Manufacturers such as Bar S Foods, a Phoenix company, lost $250,000 due to this operation. Financial records showed that during the 5 years that Robin Ramirez operated the business, she took in $2.3 million at a profit margin of 91%. In June of 2012, she made $214,334. Her expenses were $5,700 on postage, $1,900 on printing. Sergeant Lake said, quote, "There were a lot of things that we don't see from a first-time offender, so we believe that she was coached by someone bigger," end quote. In other words, how does a suburban Phoenix housewife learn to operate a criminal enterprise? I definitely agree that she would have had to have somebody show her how to create the coupons, how to find the printer, how to pretty much run this whole operation. I don't think there's a book called Coupon Counterfeiting for Dummies. At least not yet. It seems like they have them on everything else. She had 12 different bank accounts, one of which indicated an earning of $2 million over the past year. A Phoenix TV station talked to a South Carolina woman who was a customer, and she said, quote, "I didn't know that this was fraudulent. I didn't have any idea." She said she saved hundreds on baby formula and diapers on this site, but she was suspicious. She said, quote, "I feel like it was too good to be true, but it was working," end quote. You know that saying about if something's too good to be true, it probably is. A customer named Karen said that she spent hundreds on coupons on the site, but was confronted by her local store manager, who told her, "You can't use these. They're fraudulent coupons." The police guessed that Robin had been able to get away with her scheme for so long, partly to keeping a low profile and hiding her ill-gotten gains. They found that she rented a hangar at Deer Valley Airport, in which she stored 26 vehicles, including 3 Camaros, a luxury motorhome with granite countertops, and $30,000 in flooring, a 40-foot speedboat, off-road vehicles, and a custom Corvette worth $150,000. And like I said, maybe the weirdest part of that is she kept all these in the hangar so that nobody would, I guess, get suspicious. Like, I wonder why that housewife has a $150,000 custom Corvette. Also, they bought 3 condos, up to 100 rifles and handguns, all paid for in cash. According to Lake, quote, "The opulence and the money was the equivalent of drug cartel type of stuff. That's the type of money they had," end quote. At the time, this was the largest coupon counterfeiting enterprise in U.S. history, costing manufacturers like Procter & Gamble, Hershey, etc., millions of dollars. Usually, when there's more than one defendant, at least one agrees to roll over on the others in exchange for deals. And of course, that's what happened here. Marilyn and Amy each pled guilty to a single charge of counterfeiting and agreed to testify against Robin. They both got probation. I don't know how much. Robin also agreed to plead guilty to counterfeiting, fraud, and illegal control of an enterprise on February 25, 2013. She was sentenced to 2 years plus 7 years probation. She served her time at the Arizona State Prison Complex in Perryville from May 6th of 2013 until January 10th, 2014, so about 8 months. In the meantime, her husband divorced her and she lost her mansion. Marilyn and Amy finished their probation periods, and we know they still live and work in the Phoenix area. Hopefully, they've learned their lesson and have kept their noses clean. Robin, however, not so much. She was ordered to pay $1.3 million in restitution to Procter & Gamble at $300 a month. And I can assert, as somebody who had to supervise people on probation, house arrest, whatever, pay so much per month restitution, $300 a month for the kind of money she made is not unreasonable. She has supposedly fallen $4,000 behind in payments, and in July of 2021, she was back in court when her probation officer cited her for failure to pay. I had to do that all the time. It was so aggravating. Her probation was extended for 7 years. Sergeant Lake is now retired, and he founded something called the Center on Shadow Economics. This works to mitigate the economic impact of black market crimes. He said, quote, "I try to work with police chiefs at the state and local level to come up with ways of explaining how important protecting our business infrastructure is," end quote. So you know how I said that this was the biggest coupon counterfeiting operation in U.S. history? Well, Lori Ann Talens and her husband Pacifico of Virginia Beach, Virginia, said, "Hold my beer." These two ran a very similar scam as Ramirez and Company from April of 2017 until May of 2020. Lori was a skilled counterfeiter with a background in graphic arts and marketing, so she knew how to make an almost perfect counterfeit coupon. According to the authorities, they were, quote, "virtually indistinguishable from authentic coupons," end quote. Bud Miller of the CIC said, quote, "Lori Ann Talens had an extensive knowledge of how point-of-sale systems operate, so she really had, in one person, all of the talents necessary to create counterfeit coupons," end quote. Lori and her husband, she claims there were other people involved who were never charged, used Facebook and something called Telegram, which is an encrypted message service, to find groups of coupon enthusiasts, and this is where they sold their counterfeit coupons. Investigators found over 13,000 different templates for counterfeit coupons for at least 132 different brands on her computer. She claims some were made by others in her online couponing group. Her biggest victims, manufacturers, were Kimberly Clark Paper Products at $8.99 million, Procter & Gamble Household Goods at $2.8 million, Unilever Food at $2.5 million, and the Henkel Corporation, which makes cleaning supplies, for $1.7 million. The total retail loss that she caused was $31.8 million. In September of 2021, 41-year-old Lori pled guilty to mail fraud, wire fraud, and healthcare fraud, and was sentenced by a federal judge in Norfolk, Virginia, to 12 years. 43-year-old Pacifico pled guilty in his case and was sentenced to 7 years. Lori is serving her sentence in FPC Alderson, a minimum security prison camp in West Virginia, also known as a club fed. Her release date is January 31st of 2031. In prison, she works as a dishwasher and has said that she can't pay the restitution of $31,864. Her judge was unsympathetic and said, "Well, you gotta." She's supposed to pay $500 a month. Her and her husband had to forfeit all that they had, including their house. And I don't know how her house compares to that of Robin Ramirez. It's probably equally opulent or ostentatious, I guess. She said, quote, "I know what I was doing was wrong." Her elderly mother had to go back to work to help her pay restitution and legal fees. So I saw some quotes that Lori made, mainly complaining about the restitution. She comes across as very intelligent and articulate. So with that and her background in design, I can see how she started and got away with such a complex coupon operation. So time to talk about psychology, and of course my disclaimer, as everybody should know, I'm not a mental health professional. I can't diagnose anybody, and I've never met any of the people involved. We're just going to speculate. So there's no big mystery why Robin, Lori, and the others did what they did. Give you a hint, it's a five-letter word that starts with G. As far as the people who helped or knowingly bought and used these fraudulent coupons, I kind of have a feeling that maybe they didn't see it as bad, that they weren't hurting anybody but the big companies. So, honestly, I'm kind of more interested in the extreme couponing behavior. Remember I said about the adrenaline rush I thought they were getting at the checkout in that show? Well, in a Psychology Today article, a psychologist was quoted as saying, quote, "It's the challenge, the rush, and above all, the buzz that feeds her compulsion," end quote. Another psychologist, Dr. Ted Klontz, said that couponing can become an addiction, and obsession with saving money can take over people's lives and lead to something called financial hoarding disorder. I got a kick out of a comment by Dr. Goli Bocci, who said, "Remember when I was telling you about the episode where they bought all the mustard, 79 bottles of mustard, and I'm like, what in the, you know what, are you going to do with all that mustard?" Well, the psychologist said, what are they going to do with all that mustard? So I wasn't the only one who watched this and took note of this and was like, oh my God, really? He also said, quote, "At the very least, I am comfortable to say it seems unhealthy," end quote. And the psychiatrist or psychologist interviewed also said that this kind of behavior, meaning extreme couponing, can possibly lead to addiction, obsession, compulsion, and hoarding, none of which are good. I just wanted to read you something that I found on a site called Coupons in the News. And I guess coupons make news enough to have their own website. And a couple comments I found interesting. These are comments from just regular old people. They are talking about the movie Queen Pins. And somebody says, quote, "Am quite literally watching the movie as I type this, and the situation is hilarious. I personally can't demonize these women, and in fact I applaud them for shafting the corporations that daily shaft every American taxpayer. Lol. In the end, only one woman served any time, and that being a mere 24 months at Club Fed. P.S. F.K. Procter & Gamble," end quote. And he's got a couple errors there. If he's talking about Robin Ramirez, she only did like 10 months, and that wasn't Club Fed. That was Lori, and that happened after this was written. Another comment that somebody made on the same page said that they feel bad for the women, and that corporations in America have been cheating and killing the rest of us for years. They don't even care about the money because they'll just write it off as a loss. So I'm curious as to what Jens think. Like, there's what Nathan thinks. How bad and unethical, or I don't know what the word is, do you think this type of crime? Oh, quick announcement. I'm changing my Patreon. So, very important. I need everybody who is currently a Patreon member to cancel your membership because the Patreon app is problematic. I can't start a new thing which I want to have just one tier. It's going to be one tier, just $2 a month. It won't let me wipe out any existing tiers if there are already people in them. So I need everybody to cancel your membership and rejoin at the tier. It's just called Teacher's Pet. It's not freshman, sophomore, you know, how it used to be. It's just Teacher's Pet, and it's $2 a month. And next week, we're starting a series. I know it's going to be at least two or three parts. And it's what I like to call my specialty, which is multiple perpetrator homicides. I don't want to give too much away. It's not like real widely known, but there are other podcasts and documentaries about it. It is more than one person involved in a murder. So that's coming up. I don't know if it'll be a week or two or as soon as I can. So before we go, let's hear from Dave and Garrett of Criminal AF.
Are you a true crime fanatic? Do you want to know all the morbid details? Do you think talking about serial killers is fun? If you answered yes, then you're in the right place, and I finally found your crew. Join hosts Dave Jari and Garrett Corder from Criminal AF every Monday to discuss some of the most heinous crimes imaginable while having fun doing it. Dave and Garrett bring a unique and unfiltered approach to their storytelling that will have you shocked beyond belief 1 minute and laughing out of your seat the next. This is not your grandma's true crime podcast. While we understand that Criminal AF is not for everyone, we ask that you at least give it a listen. And if it's not for you, hey, thanks for checking it out.
See ya.
But if it is, welcome to the debauchery.